time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
Just like with the stock, it's a function of the volume of the security. You can often put your limit order in between those two prices. That's if you're still concerned about how do you value cryptocurrencies.
Sumeet, great having you back on the podcast. It's been a little while.
Thanks so much for having me, Nate. It's great to be here.
Okay, so let's start with everything going on in the markets first, and then we can pivot over to the ETF side of the story, which is really interesting. As I mentioned, the S&P 500 is now down about 5% on the year. It was down over 8% just last week. And look, obviously, neither you or I have a crystal ball, but I would be curious just to get your take on this overall coronavirus situation right now. I mean, are you viewing this as a short-term blip? Do you think the market implications are much more serious and longer term? How are you reading this right now?
Well, I think you said it right, Nate. None of us has a crystal ball. Absolutely no one in the market has a crystal ball. So any forecast about what could potentially happen with the coronavirus and the impact on economic growth and things like that is just speculation. But, you know, that being said, you know, people are going to speculate. It's only natural when you get, you know, this type of news flowing through into the market. And people are going to not only speculate, they're going to extrapolate. You know, we've seen what happened in China. We saw the quarantine of millions of people in China. We saw the ghost towns. We saw the factories and all the storefronts that shut down in that country. And then we saw what happened to the economy after all that happened on Saturday. We finally got some numbers to all that, and we saw China's manufacturing PMI. It dropped to an all-time low, I think around 35 or something like that. And that's even lower than where the PMI was during the financial crisis. So people are extrapolating, what if that happened here in the U.S.? And it's interesting, you know, if this was all contained in China, like the market initially thought it was going to be up until a week and a half ago or so, the reaction wouldn't be as bad as it has been. I mean, it's when the virus started spreading outside of China, into South Korea, Italy, Iran, and now it's in the U.S., that's when investors started to get spooked. Because then now you're talking about a global pandemic, something that can't be contained, that causes widespread fear, supply chain disruptions, collapsing consumer demand, things like that. So that's really got investors group. This could be a global thing. And suddenly they're thinking worst case scenarios. They're thinking, the early 20th century Spanish flu, which infected 500 million people and killed something like 50 million people. They're thinking those worst case scenarios. But I don't think investors should panic. I think they should stay calm because none of us has a crystal ball.
Well, you know what's interesting about this? You mentioned widespread fear, and obviously, I'm no health expert or medical profession. I know you're not either. I see people out there wanting to sort of make comparisons to the common flu, right? And say, well, look at how many people die from the common flu every year. The coronavirus isn't a big deal. And my response to that is put the medical side of the equation, you know, put that to the side right now. If people are fearful and they're scared, that has an economic impact, period. It doesn't matter how serious the coronavirus ultimately ends up being. If people are scared and they think it's serious and they stop, going to work or factory shut down, they stop buying stuff, they stop going to restaurants, that causes an economic disruption. And I think that sort of gets lost in the discussion here when people want to, you know, either say this is really serious or not really serious in terms of the coronavirus. Again, I don't think it matters. It's how people perceive it. I think another interesting aspect here is just the political ramifications. Obviously, Trump's running on, his platform's on a strong economy. And if things start deteriorating a little bit, that becomes problematic. And I think if somebody like, Bernie Sanders, we'll see what happens today, Super Tuesday, and where Joe Biden ends up. But Bernie Sanders running on, healthcare for all. What if you have a bunch of people who get sick, they're uninsured, and they rack up large hospital bills? Well, some people might start running into Bernie Sanders' arms in terms of the general election. So I think that's interesting as well. I guess the other aspect to watch here is what will the Fed do, right? And I know investors, you know, over the past 10 years, there's been a lot of talk about how much the Fed has helped the markets, has been a significant tailwind. That's the other wild card. I guess on that note, I mean, do you have any thoughts on sort of how the Fed may approach this?
You're absolutely right. And it's really the fear of the unknown and the Fed kind of being useless in this type of situation. I mean, they could cut rates, but it's really not going to change the virus or really reduce the impact of the virus. It could help loosen up financial conditions a little bit, but the Fed having little to no power over this virus, I think, is causing some of the fear in the markets. And like you said, also, if, you know, people are just fearful, hunkering down in their houses, regardless of how deadly or not deadly the virus is, that's going to have some impact. And that's really what happened in China. I mean, we've seen 2,000 some odd deaths in China, but compared to the billion plus population over there, relatively small, yet we still saw the largest contraction in manufacturing pretty much ever in that country. So that's the fear. And those are the type of worst case scenarios people are fearful about. But I would just say the worst case scenario is not inevitable. I mean, we've seen deadly viruses come and go every decade. We saw SARS, we saw MERS, we saw Ebola, we saw the swine flu. So we've seen those, and the global economy has survived. So, you know, it remains to be seen what impact this has, but I think there is reason to be optimistic. The mortality rate, something like 1%, is what we're seeing in countries with advanced healthcare systems. And experts say that number could even trend down as healthcare professionals learn more about the virus and how to deal with it, and, you know, treatments and potentially even vaccines are developed down the line. So in that regard, given that, you know, the worst case scenario is not inevitable, and things could potentially get better, and the market's down, you know, 16% peak to trough, I don't think now is the time for investors to panic and make rash decisions, because no one knows ahead of anyone else what's going to happen. So I think if you're a long-term investor, just stick to your long-term plan, don't react to the day-to-day headlines, and if you're a trader, well, then just enjoy the volatility.
No, I couldn't have said it better myself. That's always wise counsel. Sumeet, let's pivot over to the ETF side of the story, which I find fascinating just watching everything last week. And let's maybe start with ETF flows last week. I did see $21 billion flowed out of ETFs overall. What stood out here just in terms of specific ETF inflows and outflows?
So, yeah, Nate, we did see an outflow from U.S. listed ETFs last week. And that was actually the first weekly outflow of the year. But it was relatively modest if you think about how bad the performance in stocks was last week. We only saw $21 billion of outflows. And year to date, we still have net inflows of around $75 billion. And that's something like 3-4 times what we had last year.
Yeah, that's still a big number.
Yeah, absolutely. And that tells me that, you know, ETF investors, they're not panicking. And they're even buying some ETFs, things like Vanguard ETFs, IVV, VTI, VOO, and even IVV, the iShares product. We've seen those kind of long-term buy and hold type products. Those are the ETFs that people are gravitating to, in addition to, of course, the investment-grade bond ETFs, the treasury ETFs, things like that. IEF was actually the biggest flows winner last week. That's only natural when you're seeing the 10-year drop to all-time lows. And then you even saw speculators coming in to the ETF market. They're buying things like the ProShares Ultra Pro QQQ, ticker symbol TQQQ, which is pretty much leveraged exposure to the triple Qs. And that bet paid off big on Monday. We saw 15% surge in that ETF as the market rallied something like 5%. And then on the outflow side, we saw SPY lose about $19 billion. That's not really that surprising. SPY tends to be a favorite among traders who get in and out. I think more interestingly, we saw outflows from the junk bond ETFs, like HYG at $4 billion in outflows, and JNK at $1.2 billion in outflows. So we saw a lot of trepidation about junk bonds last week. As, you know, investors, they were concerned that if we do get a hit to the economy from the coronavirus, the companies with the weakest balance sheets, the ones that raise money through junk bonds, they're going to get hit the hardest.
By the way, you mentioned Vanguard. I don't know if you saw this last week. Bloomberg's Eric Balchunas pointed out that Vanguard broke their monthly flow record in February, $25 billion, with about $6.5 billion of that coming last week. And you pointed it out, you know, ETFs like VTI, the Vanguard Total Stock Market ETF, VOO, the S&P 500 ETF. Do you think this is just another indication that Vanguard investors are a bit of a different breed?
No, absolutely. I mean, they are a different breed. They're buy and hold long-term investors. They don't care what's going on day to day. And this is just another data point that corroborates that. It doesn't change the fact Vanguard is the buy and hold issuer.
Okay, what about from an ETF performance perspective? I guess both good and bad. And I'm guessing this aligns somewhat closely with inflows and outflows. But what ETF stood out here?
In terms of performance, I mean, we mentioned the Treasuries, TLT, the 20-plus year Treasury ETF. That thing was on fire last week. I think it's up something like 40% year to date, and half of those gains came in the last 2 weeks. And the 30-year, I think, is up to 1.58%, so that's giving support to TLT. And then GLD, the gold ETF, that was going up for much of last week when we saw gold prices top 1650. That was a 7-year high. But then, interestingly, later in the week, gold prices actually dropped as investors presumably use that commodity as a source of capital. When everything else was going down, gold was up, so they decided to sell, maybe to raise capital and buy something that's cheaper. And then on the downside, one interesting ETF I've been keeping an eye on is the U.S. Global Jets ETF, JETS. That's been in focus because airlines are obviously canceling tons of flights, and they're losing a lot of business, so they're getting hit hard. And we saw mid-February, JETS was actually flat on a year-to-date basis, and now it's down 25% year-to-date, so huge hit for that ETF. But it could be interesting if you're looking for a rebound play once all of this kind of works through the system. So JETS is one to keep an eye on. And then finally, I'd look at XLE, the Energy Select Sector SPDR fund. That one got absolutely hammered with oil prices going under 50. And now it's at an 11-year low, and it's yielding something like 5%. So if you're a value investor or an income investor, I think you should take a look at XLE. That could be a little interesting.
Yeah, I was running some performance figures over the weekend, and it was amazing. I mean, energy this year is just getting absolutely bludgeoned. You know, you look at something like USO, the United States Oil Fund, that was down nearly 11% last week. Obviously, concerns over an economic slowdown, and, you know, I think there's been a lack of appetite to cut production from OPEC and Russia. Something else that caught my attention, somewhat surprisingly, the China ETFs aren't down as much as you might expect. You know, you look at something like the iShares MSCI China ETF, that was basically flat last week. Does that surprise you?
It does surprise me, and I think there could be two reasons for that. One could be simply that China got hit with the virus first, and they took these drastic actions. So people are speculating that China might be the first one to kind of get out of this negative situation and move forward from here, because they were the first ones to get hit, and they took such big actions to combat the virus. The second thing I think about is, you know, the Chinese government, they often intervene in the financial markets, so potentially they could be supporting their equity markets here and keep trying to keep prices from falling even further. So it's kind of difficult to tell which of those two factors is the biggest factor. But, I mean, it's super surprising that China, which is the epicenter of the virus, is actually holding up better than a lot of markets around the world.
Sumit, I think one of the benefits of a market environment like we're seeing right now is it provides an opportunity for some ETFs to really shine, right? Because with the market we've had over the past 10 years or so, there really haven't been that many opportunities. And one ETF that stood out to me last week was SWAN, the Amplify Black Swan Growth and Treasury Core ETF. It outperformed the S&P by like 9 or 10%. I'm just curious, any other ETFs like that maybe hedge or do something drastically different that caught your attention?
I'd say VXX, which is the volatility product that tracks the VIX index, that was pretty interesting last week. I think it went up something like 53%, as you would expect, given that the VIX spiked over 50. But as I wrote on ETF.com, unless you timed your purchase perfectly, VXX probably didn't even give you that effective of a hedge, because on a year-over-year basis, it's still down 28%, even though it was up 53% last week. That's because it has to roll over those futures contracts every month, and those roll costs really negatively impact the return on that fund over time. So unless you were in investment-grade bonds or gold last week, it doesn't seem to me that much of anything was immune to last week's sell-off. I mean, even trend pilot ETFs like the PTLC or buffer ETFs from Innovator, even they got hit last week because their protective powers really don't kick in until you get a bigger sell-off, something like 20, 30, 40%. That's when they, you know, hedge you or switch out of equities into treasuries. So, you know, it's really hard to avoid a sell-off in this 10%, 20% range. There's not a lot of ETFs that are going to protect you from that and yet still, you know, give you upside if the market rallies to new highs. So really, treasuries and gold are the only thing that are going to be immune, or unless you have inverse ETFs. Those are, of course, going to rally.
Sumit, only a couple of minutes left. One other area I wanted to touch on, you know, another benefit that I think came out of the markets last week, and you know I'm always looking for silver linings, trying to stay optimistic, but I think we have to talk a little bit about ETF trading, because there's always this talk that ETF liquidity will dry up in a market downturn and ETFs won't function properly, right? Death spirals. We saw none of that. And in fact, there's been record trading volume in ETFs like SPY and HYG that you pointed out earlier. Everything is functioning perfectly. There tight spreads, creation redemption working as it should. There have been no issues. And I know you just wrote a piece where you did a pretty deep dive on the topic of ETF trading. Can you maybe just briefly offer some perspective on what you saw last week? And I guess, do you agree? I mean, I didn't see any issues out there. Did anything, you know, show up on your radar?
No, I absolutely agree. I didn't see anything, and I didn't even read about anyone blaming ETFs for the decline either. Usually we have a couple articles pop up about people blaming ETFs, and I think that's probably the case because, you know, this time around there's an obvious culprit for the decline, the coronavirus. You can't really scapegoat ETFs this time around. But still, it's still yet another data point that kind of swats away the idea that ETFs are a ticking time bomb, especially, you know, things like junk bond ETFs, which people blame a lot. And, you know, I did write that piece for ETF.com, and I mentioned that ETFs are the most actively traded securities on any given day. They trade as many or more shares than the most actively traded stocks like Apple, Microsoft, Google, things like that. And that was the case last week also. Bloomberg's Eric Balchunas, I think, pointed out last week that SPY became the first stock or ETF to ever trade more than $100 billion worth of shares in a single day last week. And we saw HYG also had tremendous volume. That junk bond ETF traded over 100 million shares last Friday, the most it's ever traded in a single session. And yet the fund tracked its net asset value extremely closely. It was within 0.5% of its net asset value on either side, even though the prices for the fund were declining. And that's pretty much what we see in a typical week. So absolutely no problems on that front.
Well, I wrote about this yesterday. I think some people forget, or maybe they're just not aware, ETFs were actually created to provide a liquidity buffer. This after the 1987 stock market crash. And you look at how they traded in a week like last week, and that's exactly how they operated. They were a liquidity buffer. Investors turned to them. You know, they were a shock absorber with all the disruptive events in the market. So, you know, everything that I saw, they functioned perfectly. I just think it's another test that was passed. Sumit, great stuff this week. I really appreciate the job you do tracking ETF flows and performance and trading. I know you do this every week, but I think when markets hit stretches like we saw, this can help add some context and perspective to everything going on. So thank you for taking the time this week. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Nate. Thanks so much for having me.
That was ETF.com, Sumit Roy.